BRS meeting.
I think about seven people have already got charged.
April 10th, 2017.
Clamor for public comment at this time. Maybe we'll move on to our ombudsman report and our always people are welcome to interject as they feel the need. Any thoughts about that? Again, I don't think we had a motion, so I don't think we need to change the minutes or anything. I just wanted to point that out. All right, anything else? All those in favor accept the minutes as submitted, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Wait, Charlie's accepted. That's great. Thank you. Larry, Grungy, aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you for being minutes accepted from February. Thanks, guys. I appreciate that. Okay, is Mr. Schaefer here for our listening report? We want to start with that.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, David. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Frank.
Yeah, I think you're on.
Okay.
Thank you.
The only thing I had to follow up on from last February is the status of the accessibility of the online complaint system. That is a third-party application article. I tested a proposed fix to it last week, and it appears to be working well except one button, one last button, where you add a picture or a document as an attachment, and actually the button works if you use JAWS and you just select your button list and hit that button, but it's not in tab order, so you wouldn't otherwise know it's there. It skips right over it, so I'm trying to get that last little thing fixed, but even if we can't get the contractor to fix that, I'm going to go ahead and move the whole thing into production this week so that these people can file complaints online in a fully accessible mode, and then we'll fix that one little thing afterwards. I think it's more important to get the system operating again.
Thank you.
Is there anything that the committee has to
Any questions about that issue? I actually have a question. So that task is outsourced, that is contracted, that is the web accessibility?
Yeah, we had to outsource that to a subcontractor. Oracle couldn't fix it themselves, so we had to fix it for them with our own money and contractors. And,
so the Oracle provides the mainframe?
Oracle provides the basic interface between the website and our CRM, our customer relations database, that's used in our complaint center, our customer center. All that software is Oracle software. And so they built a link between the website and that input into our databases. So that's all we had to get. Contractor work with them to fix it. We couldn't fix it ourselves, but we don't have the access to that.
Okay. Sure, that makes sense. I had two other things I wanted to mention, but did you have other items, Dave?
No, that's all I have.
Okay. Do other members of the committee have things they want to bring up to the office?
Yeah.
Rhea?
Yeah.
Please go ahead.
Okay. I'm not sure if you concluded your report before they began to want to come forward.
Yeah,
I wanted to follow up with going out with the white form. I don't know if we need to break me up the report complete, but I wanted to follow up on what's happening with the white form. I know they disseminated throughout the whale festival. But I'm not seeing and when I talked to employees at the kiosk or throughout the system, they're not aware of what I'm talking about, even if you didn't want to leave out or something, but they're not familiar with what I'm talking about. They want to see menu training to set up or something, some kind of structure for those employees so that they can start using it.
Okay, so after, I guess that was the March, the February meeting, maybe it was February meeting, we heard your concerns and the Office of ADA Policy and Planning with Rail, but separately from them began doing our own audit of stations with the whiteboards. We haven't gotten to all 91 yet, but I will tell you that 85% of the stations we've gone to, all kiosks, had the whiteboard. And that means all kiosks. Now, those other 15% meant that one or more of the kiosks could not identify their whiteboard. So I'm confident that the whiteboards are there. They've been misplaced in some places, packed away because of lack of use of them. So we have to get them utilized. Now, the station managers are only going to use them when a customer who's deaf or hard of hearing is trying to communicate with them, and there's challenges in that regard. So they're not being utilized tremendously. That is, in fact, the case. So what we're doing with Rail is, and also then, so one, they are disseminated. You can trust that. You can trust us on that side of it. Now, in terms of station managers not knowing or understanding, I'll use different words, but here's what we want to do, just in general. What we're asking the Rail to do, we're helping them draft a notice to station managers. And what that's going to be is a memo distributed to all kiosks and all station managers to allow us to help Rail educate them as to the language, as to the purpose, and the use of the whiteboards. So you're right. When we go up to the station manager, sometimes they didn't know what it was, but it was sitting right there. They didn't know what it was for, which was kind of, you know, I try to be polite because you think it's pretty obvious, but you can't assume these things. So yeah, there is a little more work we have to do on the personnel side. We're going to start with a memo that my office is going to help draft so that we're using the right language. But in terms of dissemination, that has occurred. And now what we're asking, I'm asking my colleagues, but I'm also asking any of you, even if you're not deaf or hard of hearing, because, you know, nobody in access is, but we're doing that survey, we're doing that audit. If you go to a Rail station, ask them and tell them and to help them. And one thing we found, you can say to them that it may not have been used that much, so it's probably packed away, look behind the other files you have to look down in this storage cabinet. Help them find it, because generally speaking, it's in there somewhere.
Chris, I have a Jimmy Brand, and a quick, well, go ahead.
So I just wanted to follow up. I appreciate that you're following up on them, really. And, you know, I think that was a good one tactic that I had when we met with Mona, was that not only is somebody of the training and me sort of naturally get the method, but there, and that's just collecting that sort of right or maybe putting in you. So I'm glad that you're following up on that. So thank you. I do want to share an example with you. So I think of that. We had April 1st on Saturday, right? We had tickets to the closures because there was a lot of tour, you know, they were here at the license center. And so my husband's parents came in town and we took the tickets to the closures that we got on the red line. And the 5:15 stopped to the license center. And so we had a very smooth ride down. We joined the closures for the rest of the show. And then we got back on the train going up to Shady Grove, Maryland. We got stopped, I think, two pops circle, I think it was. Yeah, we were already past Bellarmine North. So it was two pops circle, and then we got stopped. Apparently, a train had broken down and they ran out. And it disabled the entire Maryland, entire. We were just sitting on the train, the door was open, waiting. We still had at least 7 or 8 stops left, two by stop, and just waiting. So we were making announcements, but it wasn't on the train. We were making announcements over the public announcement in the stations. So we were requesting repairs, the hearing. So they were trying to hear the announcement. So the first time around, everybody on the train could not hear the announcement at all. Nobody knew what they were saying. So the second time they made an announcement, people were getting up and getting onto the platform, trying to hear the public announcement. And they still were having a great difficulty. People were talking to each other, knowing what they say, trying to piece together the announcement. And this kept going on for another 20 minutes. I mean, we were on that train a long time, and people could not understand what an announcer was saying. people complain on and off, trying to hear, nobody can hear a thing. So, first of all, I have my phone with me at all times, but I wasn't getting customers, just doing email, and I wasn't getting reception at all, you know. So I'm just sitting there really frustrated, waiting for my phone, you know, hoping. So finally, I was planning to go see them. Why don't they use the whiteboard? Because people obviously are not understanding what's the number. Why can't somebody write down and say, you know, if they were trained or not, or whatever, I didn't find out how that works.
The one thing I would wonder, and that would be a frustrating experience, I can only imagine. Did the station managers, did y'all see them come down to the platform at all during that time? Interesting. Because they're the ones with the whiteboards, of course. I mean, okay, we'll follow up on it just to find out, not necessarily what happened. You know that the train broke down. But what are the procedures there? What messaging went out? Is this one of these things where we're going to fix it on the fly and just ask people to be patient? Or is there a protocol in terms of, if a train is sitting on a platform more than 5 minutes, should a message be sent out? Let's find out.
And Chris said that, just to add to that, this was partly what I was going to ask about, with respect to the standard operating procedures for the use of the whiteboards. Obviously, they could be helpful in situations where you need to communicate with somebody at the kiosk. But as Brianne has mentioned, you know, a number of times, including just now, there are times, obviously, on the platform when the station manager may need to go down there to you know, help direct passengers during disruption of services or various situations. And in those cases, those whiteboards would also be of use in cases for passengers. So I'm just wondering if it's also part of the protocol for the station managers that they have to go to the platform to be prepared to know, at the very least, to know what those things are so they can communicate with people who may need them.
I believe that's a very fair question. I'm sure it's not in the protocol right now.
Okay.
Now that the devices have been placed in the kiosk, it shouldn't be a problem necessarily to add that to the SOP.
Yeah. And you know, again, yeah, because otherwise they're not going to think to necessarily just grab it and run down the platform and take care of stuff.
Right.
And at the very least, that they ought to know where those things are and be aware that those could be tools that they may need to have. You know, at hand for folks who need that for communication purposes.
Did you all just pass the whiteboards out with pens and here's what? Did you give any explanation to why you were passing them out? What do you mean they're somewhere where they got to find them?
So what happened, yes, our rail transportation management, RTRA department, they're the ones who run the rail and manage the station managers. They distributed the whiteboards to the station managers on or right before inauguration day with instructions on how to use them and what they're for. However, it's not an excuse, this is just kind of a reality of where we are right now. If for everyone, Brianne, if you will, if there are days and days and they don't use them, and nobody else is seeking communication through this method, they get put off to the side, and then you know one manager comes in, it's off to the side, they don't see it, and people then after a little while they forget about it. Somebody's packed it somewhere else. They didn't tell the station manager to replace them. Oh, by the way, just for your notice, I packed the whiteboard down here in the file cabinet. And then you go to look for it, or you know, myself and my staff go and ask them where it is. Oh, I haven't seen it in weeks. Yeah, somebody's packed it away, there's been no communication about it. So we have to kind of reinforce, this is a new tool for them, so we're going to have to just continue to reinforce it. Even if they're not using it a lot, we have to reinforce it to them that it's there to be used when needed. And maybe expanding its use beyond just customers who are deaf or hard of hearing, but
absolutely
like that could help keep the awareness of them up.
Okay, if they're single tracking, and we don't know, you don't know who's on the train. Just write single tracking on there, and they could walk with single tracking. You don't have to ask them if they're single tracking.
I agree.
That's wrong.
You've had sign twirling to the duties that's sign. I think that's a good point that he's done. And thank you, Chris, for agreeing to get back to us with some details about what the protocols are and also for how you're going to strengthen those procedures. I did have a quick question, if I may. I don't know if this is something David can answer or Chris or whoever. It has to do with automatic train operation. I heard, I think it was on an NPR report this week, that Metro is not planning to go back to ATO and will be maintaining manual train operation. And I wanted to just confirm that with you or see if you have anything to add to that. And just by way of clarification, I do think there is an access component to that, which is, I think, for a lot of people who have limited mobility or even who are senior citizens and have, our channel sometimes to stand. We know that the trains are really crowded right now. It probably will be for a while. And that means a lot more people are standing. And without ATO, that means a lot of people are being thrown around a bit. It can be a rough ride sometimes. So I do think there is some concern, at least on my part, for that. Do y'all have anything at this moment, maybe something to come back to?
Yeah, we have no new information on that. I probably heard about it after you did. Because it's on the great paper.
Yeah.
No, we were not necessarily informed about that.
Yeah.
Now, and I think we definitely could add that to the meeting next month just to get an update from somebody. I would say I agree with you to an extent on all aspects. Anything we do has an accessibility aspect to it. I heard your point about the people on the inside of the car. I think my whole issue always with ATO, and still kind of learning how that works, is making sure that the automatic train control doesn't necessarily extend home to the doors, so that the human aspect of being able to keep the doors open, if they see someone on a mobility device or the senior that you're talking about, is possible as well. And I think that can be clarified by one of the technicians as well. So yeah, there's a lot we can ask about it, but in terms of Metro's immediate plans, other than what we've seen in the media, that's about all we have right this moment.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you. And you bring up a good point. It's something that several of us have mentioned in recent months, which is that perhaps one of the advantages of having a slightly less demanding rush hour schedule every 8 minutes as opposed to six, that perhaps 12 times would be a smidge longer to allow people more time to get on and off the trains, or at the very least to give the drivers an opportunity to assess if there's a need for more time and allow for that without having a large impact on the schedule. So, excellent. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that. Does anyone have anything else for Mr. Schaefer?
I have a couple of questions.
Charlie, go right ahead.
First thing that I'd like to ask about is going back to the complaint software and the button that is not described. What does that button do?
It's an attached file button. It attaches a picture or a document to your complaint, so you saw something and you took a picture of it and wanted to add that to your complaint.
I see.
That would be what you'd use to, then it goes to a browse feature so you can find it in the right place in your computer. If you don't know the file location, to type it in. If you knew the file location, you could type it in and you wouldn't need the button. But I have no clue what the file extension is on something that saves, so you have to look for it.
Yeah, it sounds like something that it's good to know it's there, but it's not necessarily all that important.
Right. That's why I want to get it done. It's not as important as everything else.
Right.
The other thing that I wanted to ask about is that the whiteboard thing. If it's true that station managers may just get swamped with all kinds of things that they have to do and inadvertently forget about the whiteboards, is there some daily electronic thing that they all see that could be loaded with them and forget about the whiteboards message?
I'm not aware of any daily messaging from management to the station managers, which is why we're taking the approach of the notice to all operators, where each of them will get an individual memo, but not with a whole lot of information, including, oh, by the way, there are these whiteboards. This is going to be specific to the whiteboards, and it allows us to hold them a bit more accountable for understanding the needs and the purpose of it, including perhaps an expanded use of them.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. Okay, Barney, any other questions? Mr. Schaefer, as always, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, are we ready to move on to our discussion of lighting? I hope, is Barbara here? I hope Barbara Melville's here. Okay, sad she weren't here.
No, she isn't, but she didn't know about it.
Okay, well, as long as she had an opportunity then. Maybe she's listening. If you're listening, hi, Barbara. Just screen your questions at your phone, Barbara. Okay. Y'all ready down there?
Yes.
Sorry. No, that's why. It's all right. Chris or Dr. Mead, one of y'all want to introduce your...
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chair. With us, we have today someone you know who's come to us many times to talk about lighting in the system, Ms. Kelly Real. So she's here again to talk about that subject. But we want to welcome for the first time Mr. Gary Johnson here to talk about lighting in our maintenance report. We did send the information out, Mr. Chair, to Barbara and her team, and we do have one member that sent a comment in, and I'll read the comment at the end of the process.
That's terrific, thank you. All right, Ms. Real and Mr. Johnson, welcome, and I don't know which of you wants to start off first, but feel free to share what you want to share.
Okay, I'm Kelly Real, Senior Program Manager here at WMATA. I have the privilege of being the Program and Project Manager for the Station Lighting Upgrade Program. And so throughout the last couple of years, I'm sure you've seen that we have upgraded a majority of the mezzanines throughout the system, the underground system. We have six mezzanines yet to complete. We call them the atypicals. They're not completely underground. They are like Forest Glen, where it's kind of half outside, half inside, and as well as Wheaton and Stadium Armory. Anacostia has two mezzanines, and we're doing the last Fairview North mezzanine. There are three mezzanines at that location. So we will have these mezzanines upgraded with LED technology by the end of this fiscal year. So that's our June 30th is our completion date for that. That'll get us to 61 mezzanines completed on the system, upgraded with new lighting. Of course, after that, we've vetted the technology needed for the LEDs to do the platform area. That would be the track beds and the pylon fixtures. So we're finishing our designs right now for the underground system. And we'll be putting out contracts to upgrade the lighting. And we're looking, it's going to be roughly a three-year term to do all of the 48 underground mezzanine, track bed areas. So again, we're going to start construction in FY18 for that part of the initiative.
And Mr. Johnson, sorry, just for a point of definition, we see the track beds, you talk about the lighting that's along the edge, the flashes when trains are coming and stuff like that.
No, those are cosmetic, if you will. The edge lights. Thank you. The edge lights. No, I'm referring to the light fixtures that are behind the parapets and in the track bed that uplight the cavity of the space, the primary lighting for the station. Yes.
Well, that makes sense. Okay, thank you. And you said that's starting, fiscal year 18, so like July 1st forward for the underground stuff.
Yes. Platform area kind of like buttons it all up. Platform area lighting says when you're down on the platform where the trains are, the lighting within that cavity, that's what we're shooting at next time in 18.
I'm wondering if you have a standard expectation for every station on the platform we're talking about, or at least Michael shouldn't, because when I travel through the system, I mean every single station I go through has a different degree of lighting. Some are extremely dark, some are really bright, you know, they range throughout the system. So I'm wondering if you have an expectation standards that you plan to apply to all platforms?
Yes.
Or what's your plan for that?
Absolutely. It's about uniformity. And the design will, you know, bring in uniformity and consistency in color, temperature, and color rendering to every station equally. Same foot candle level, same color rendering indexes that we have. We are going to be, you know, we have our WMATA standards that we have to apply to, and that's where we're going. It will be consistent.
How do you prioritize which patients over? I'm just curious about that, because some patients are not as busy as some of the others, but they have better lighting. One or one are more commonly used for poor lighting. So we're wondering, how do you prioritize? How do you decide which patients get the lighting first?
That's a great question. And yes, considering we have 48 underground stations and there are varying degrees of need for each, and then there's always the inputs, throughputs as far as people and that type of dynamic. But basically I polled safety, I polled in our police department. There's like six different departments that I polled that had varying input as to why they would, for safety and security and throughput. Everybody has a different vision or like a different way of looking at why they would do one station over the other. So I did do that internally and kind of assess which ones are going to hit first. Of course, just to let everybody know, it's always the transfer stations that are priority 1, 2, and 3.
I'm sorry, Mr. Lillard, I didn't interrupt you. But
yes.
What is throughput?
Meaning the amount of people in a station, out of a station,
traffic, busy, not busy.
So does that kind of answer your question? But it was heavily considered, where we're going and why, internally.
And is that part of the capital budget? I mean, where does that money comes from? A pretty secure place?
Yes. It comes through, it's capital.
Okay.
Yeah, federal.
And did you have more to report, or Mr. Johnson, have anything to add? We're kind of starting early with questions. I want to make sure you had your full opportunity.
Sure. Good evening. My name is Garrett Johnson. I'm the general superintendent for systems maintenance. Part of our group does the lighting repairs in our stations to improve low voltage repair work. Like Kelly explained, our work is supplementary to what she does. Her office does the capital improvements, and we try to keep the what's installed operational. There are interim initiatives that are going on throughout the system. Kelly explained the LED lighting that we are installing, but as you are aware, the fixtures in some in our stations are, you know, they have some age to them. So if we respond and we had to repair things, we would replace the aged equipment with a standard in the interim. Like for instance, at Navy Yard and Federal Triangle, we've actually installed new track bed fixtures there. They're not the fixtures that you're going to see eventually in our stations, but it's an interim stopgap. The reason we do that is to A, affect our repair, maintain effective lighting in stations, and two, until Kelly can get in there and install her LED fixtures that, according to the specifications, we try to, you know, do what we can to maintain the lighting levels in the stations. You may have also noticed that in some about 17 sections and counting throughout our system, we have tunnel lights that are now nice and bright and lit up. Unfortunately, we haven't finished that type of work throughout the system. We're still plugging away, but it's a great effort. We get a lot of feedback from our colleagues who have to, you know, enter the tunnels to do the maintenance, how effective the new lighting systems are. But in conjunction with systems maintenance and Kelly's group, we intend to keep at it. Just to give you an idea of how a lighting issue would get reported to us, someone would, we do inspections, naturally. As a matter of fact, there's several inspection machines that are ongoing in our system, one of which is the ADA inspection report that comes out. We take that information, create maximum work orders, and we put that on our schedule to enter the goers to go out and send our crews to repair those issues. So.
Are your work orders primarily generated from calls you get from either passengers or people working in stations or from your inspections?
From the inspections. So we predominantly from the inspections, but we do also get some from others as well.
How many people are on your crew?
The lighting, I mean, the low voltage group, which includes lighting work, circuit work, and it's about 89 folks, and that's 24/7 coverage, 365, system wide.
Do they like the name low voltage group? Is that something they want?
Well, we settled on that distinction because there's a high voltage power group in our system as well, and they do the traction power maintenance work. So to delineate the two, we go high. If they're called high, well, we didn't have a choice. That's below. And it also delineates what type of electricians, because the low voltage electricians, as you may know, are licensed electricians, whereas the high voltage power technicians are not. And that is by code.
That's interesting. I did not know that. I don't know about my colleagues, but it's interesting. Yeah, I almost think they both would have to be licensed by code, but I don't know the code.
Well, the electrical code that applies more or less to 480 and below. Anything above that is considered traction distribution, and that's covered in a different area.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Thomas.
Yes,
appreciate that. Questions from the committee? I know Dr. B has something to read to us, but I'll go to the committee first and see if you all have any questions.
Doris.
Ed
Walton. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. I'm wondering, since you just mentioned that you're replacing lights, and I have seen them in the tunnels, as well as doing replacements and maintenance on stations, which comes first in terms of expenditures of money and labor right now?
From a maintenance perspective, the station lighting would be a higher priority. However, if it's a capital project, it depends on what that federal grant dictates. If we spend it on, that would dictate the priority. But from a maintenance perspective, if there's a lighting issue in the station and a lighting issue in the tunnel, the lighting issue in the station would take a priority.
Oh, I see. But the new lights in the tunnel are a capital project or a maintenance project?
Well, the lighting initiative in the tunnel is currently funded operationally, but where there are moves afoot to get capital funding for that.
All right.
Yes.
Okay. So another question is: is there when you know, we're not, there have been big strides in trying to catch up with and maintain lighting and stations. However, well, one of the things that I've noticed going through the stations is that some of the stations that got some maintenance up front at a certain point, like Metro Center, seemed to have lights going out. And I'm curious, because when it was a station lighting work group, we were asking, like, what are the protocols? How often, you know, how long do they have to report outages of lights, and how long from the report will it take to get somebody to maintain them, you know, go in and replace lights that are burned out?
Okay.
Or was malfunctioning?
That's a very good question. We have a quarterly inspection regime that we put in place to catalog the outages in each station. Now it depends on where. If it's an outage that is readily accessible, that will be addressed quickly. If it's an outage that requires GOTR's track rights, we would have to compete for those rights, and that's a 2-week lead time, and for us to be able to respond to that issue. But if we are aware today that an issue or these lighting issues are weighed based on the level of the outage. If you have one bulb or one fixture out, that may be slightly lower on the priority list as compared to a station that has lost its lighting levels 30%. So that's how we would prioritize our work based on the outage itself, how many are out, and prioritize that way, what needs track rights and what does not.
Okay, and so what would you call like the, in stations particularly, the center platform, or I don't know what you would call it, like at Roslyn, at the lower level of Roslyn, I guess both the lower and upper level, they aren't really center tracks, but the lighting is so important to the environment there and places like the Pentagon, but they're frequently out. You know, I mean, and there was one point where, boy, Roslyn was lit up, and then you know, it degraded. grades after time. So I guess I'm asking, are those the more difficult or not? Which ones are the easiest and which ones are the
hardest? As Kelly mentioned earlier, there are some stations that are, just by design, are difficult to maintain the level of lighting that is required. And one of the unique things about lights in our system, as time goes on, over time, the lighting level will drop as the amount of, dust accumulate on the fixture cover. Now, one of the things that we do is we would go out and clean those, on a regular basis. I've taken a note to look into Roslyn and Pentagon just to see what's going on there. I was not aware that those stations were having difficulty.
Well, from time to time, I've noticed it. And the other thing that is of concern to me is, and this is kind of different.
Yeah, Doris, actually, can you make a quick set? Other people do want to ask a question too.
Sure, I do understand that. There are two things, so I'll say both of them quickly. One of them is, I've noticed, and I'm talking about the backlighting, which is frequently important in keeping the station lit and the areas in the station lit, as well as maybe the pylons, but particularly the backlighting. I have noticed that frequently whole swaths of the lighting areas are dimmed down and not as bright. For example, where you make right in the middle of Metro Center, where you make the curve around if you're coming from a red line train going to the lower level. Various places like Courthouse and Russell, and they're dimmed down. And then they'll come back up, and I want to know what that function is. The same thing happens with the platform lights, and I'm concerned about the platform lights because they're often kept so dimmed down during rest that one with vision impairment who is supposed to be able to use those as an ADA requirement to see the contrast so that they see the edge that's coming up, aren't able to do it because they're actually dimmed down, and I know they're dimmed down because when they go to flashing, they're fully bright.
I will look into those concerns. There are nothing in our system that dims the lights. We, from time to time, will have circuit issues that may result in some lights not operational, and if that's the case, we would work to get those repaired. However, if a light's on, it should be on at its full intensity based on the required specification. Now, as I've noted earlier, dust is a factor. But when you speak of the pylon lights, that should be less so than other lights. And I'm a little, curious as to why that would be. Now, you've mentioned, said Metro Center is one of the locations for which you've experienced this. And I plan to take a look and see what's going on there, because that's not natural in our lighting operations in our station.
And
Courthouse. I will certainly do that.
Okay. Yeah, so just to summarize that there's no policy or protocol or procedure that would have this light fluctuating. Okay.
That's right.
Thank you. Thank you, Doris. Ed, you have a question? Thank you.
Yeah. Several weeks ago, a local television station did a quick piece, I think it was a Union Station, on where they were painting. They were painting the whole dome white, and I'm assuming their idea is as they set it to do it in conjunction with the lighting, and
said that's, that would be.
I think it was Union
Station. Okay. For Union Station, yes, we initiated a program to get the coffers painted. You're absolutely correct that there was some publicity regarding that. We are planning to finish. Well, first of all, and I may speak out of turn here, but there is a historic aspect of going into a station and painting that station. We have to go through certain protocols to do that. I think, Kelly, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we've overcome that hurdle at this point. Union Station will be standardized in terms of its painting, and on the back end of that, we will be replacing the uplights, the track bed lights, with T5 compact fluorescent. As Kelly mentioned earlier, that is a more consistent lighting. And the color is more, it's a little brighter than what we have there today. In addition to that, now we've also gone in and converted the edge lights to white LEDs, which collectively improves the lighting in the station. So that's what we've done recently, or are doing recently. Now the track bed lights have not been completed yet, but the edge lights have, and the painting initiative is near completion.
Hey, guys, that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Thank you, guys. There are no other questions from the committee. I'll turn to public comment. I understand that Barbara Melville has joined us, and she always has interesting things to say about lighting. Barbara, do you want to ask any questions? Or?
Hey, thanks, Brian. Thank you for coming, Kelly, Mr. Johnson. I wanted to thank you guys very much. I mean, with all the things going on at Metro, lighting, it seems to be in the bottom of the priority list, and I just really want to let you know how much the low vision community really appreciates that, and visitors coming to town as well, and all the signage around the elevators, it's really making things a lot more enjoyable going through the stations. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the platform lighting. And I was wondering if you could give an estimate, please, of what the illumination level would be on the platforms and on a typical station. And I wanted to also reiterate what Doris is saying. A few weeks ago, I was in Roslyn Station, lower level, and it's very, very dim there. A lot of the lights are on, actually, but they're just so weak they can't illuminate that area. And I almost ran into somebody. It may have been you, Doris, actually, because it was that same night of the AAC meeting. And until I saw the white cane, and then I was like, oh, boy, I better move out of the way. My train was coming. So it's really at a point where it needs to be addressed. And the twin of that is the Pentagon Station, and that seems to be the same way. So really would appreciate you folks looking into that one and seeing what can be done. And I know that sometimes the water prevents lighting being turned on actually on the red line, but I don't know about that on the orange and silver part, and blue actually. Let's see. I wanted to also bring to your attention about the stairways, and I know Kelly, it's not your area, but if just for public comment, that is also very important. It's another elevation change that people do have some issues. In a lot of stations, you don't have any choice because the elevator is not working or people can't find the elevators, and they're really just scared to go down or up the stairs.
Right. Thanks so much, Barbara. Mr. Johnson, I just really want to talk to some of those issues that
yes, with standardizing in our designs for the platform area lighting. I mean, obviously, our ultimate goal is to attain the foot candle level that is, you know, part of our design criteria, which, you know, when we did the demonstrations, we did a couple of them. I know you were attending, you were able to attend one of them, Barbara, where we did foot candle readings with the LED fixtures, and we easily met the design criteria, which, you know, right off the top of my head, I really cannot remember what it was, but I know we basically tripled the amount of foot candles that we had to what we planned to have.
Okay, so it's the same, basically, is what we're talking about today.
Yes. Okay. Yes. I mean, and the, you know, the reality is, with, you know, Gary's, you know, part of it, the maintenance part of it, the, you know, keeping up with, you know, the general maintenance, we can always be consistent with the full piano out, you know, outcome, as long as we have, you know, we design it for the appropriate amount of foot candles, and then, and as well, as long as we maintain the fixture, we should be consistent through the life of the fixture.
Can I have one foot candle?
A foot candle is a measurement of illumination from a light fixture. So,
it's very quaint.
Okay. I do have a question. Are we talking about the lighting or the platform that lets you know what's going to come in? What's the name of that light?
No, that's the edge light. The platform edge light is the platform edge light. That's only what we refer to.
And the real question, possibly changing the subject. So on the idea of lighting, some patients have, you know, the edge light is so dim that I barely tell that. So you are addressing that.
We are addressing, as you've noticed, in some of our stations, we've actually gone in and upgraded those lights to white LEDs. For stations that had the white incandescent lights, you'll notice, or the red LEDs, they're dim. They're really dim. And this is an effort to go back and fix that. In some cases, we'll have to upgrade the fixtures, the lights and fixtures. But to dovetail on Barbara's question regarding lighting in egress areas, stairwells, stairways, and things like that, we give those a priority. As you've noticed, that the escalator areas and the stair areas, there are lighting up the stairs on each side of our station entrances. We are putting T5s in those locations to give you kind of a better lighting in those areas. That's a stopgap, as I communicated earlier, because Kelly's LED lighting program will add something there that's slightly different, but consistent with the specification. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, hang on one second, Albert. We got Ed.
May I have, whenever you give me the chance, please?
Absolutely. Ed, you first, and then Brianne, and then Albert.
I may have missed the thing.
And then Doris.
I know foot candle is an old term. Does that relate to distance?
Yes, it is a function of distance and the amount of lumen flux out of it.
By feet.
Yes, by foot.
Yes,
that is correct.
Okay, thank you. Brianne?
Okay. I want to talk about the edge light. I know a station where there were frequently attended by tourists or people out of town, like Magnolia or Basaltano or Bob. A lot of the tourists don't see the number of edge light before, so they often stand on them. But they're too long, and when the trains are coming in, they go down at the hub and try to get people to back away. I'm wondering if, you know, just maybe a little bit out of your short session, there's a way that you could work with the signage committee or whoever is the department in charge of the sign. And put the label, why those lights insist, what all those lights for, why they blink at certain times. Because I've seen these people going, why are they blinking and then why do they stop? So I wonder if there's anything that you could do to maybe put some awareness, make a little sign, why the light thing that's just gonna alert you when a train is coming in or when a train is departing the station or something like that. I don't know if there's any plan for that. But I mean, your GPA, you're just at least a million customers a year, and often causes a lot of delay in leisure by the train. I mean, I can see the train operator was so frustrated trying to get the damn current out of the way, you know, so they can land. So I'm wondering if there's any way that you could do something about that. Because I see the visitors, and they don't, they get so confused. I don't know.
Thank you, Rand.
We can absolutely make a suggestion to the RTRA department, and it might actually, you know, maybe something on the website that says this is what they do, this is why they're here, you know, for visitors. A lot of people hit the, you know, our website first for information. But we will pass this on.
Thank you.
I'm sure the website. I really think, you know, if you could put a little sign. Just saying, you know, these lights won't blink, they won't go off when a train is arriving or departing, or something like that. Just, you know, a once a while, the same or something. You can put that on every next light. I really think that would be very useful, very beneficial. It would prevent a lot of delay in the system.
Okay, we'll pass the suggestion on to the appropriate department.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to go to Charlie, and then Doris, you're going to get the last word. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Charlie, ready? Doris.
Thank you. My question is pretty brief. Basically, you mentioned candles, and there's this big concept of lumens, and all that's about measuring light. And it occurs to me that ought not there be a standard level of light at any given area in any given place within a station that would have to be met in order for the public to be guaranteed a well-lit but non-glaring subway station. Is that something that's in the realm of possibility?
Absolutely. And there is. Lavana does have a design criteria that we are working with King. Thank you.
Oh, and Elver, I'm sorry, I forgot you. And Doris, I promise I'm going to come back.
No problem.
But I'm going to give Elver, he hasn't had a chance to ask a question. So Elver, go for it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. My comment or question is related to lighting. When you exit the elevator inside the metro station on the lower platform, there is pretty much, it's like underneath of the escalators or staircase, but that area, so many stations, is really dark, not even dim, but dark, and it will benefit for everyone to have that really bright, because so many things can happen on that just a spot. It's on the lower level of the lower platform. I have seen so many stations that really need to have lighting in that area. So if you please. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Elmer. I'm sorry, I skipped over to go to Charlie. You were next. Sorry about that. Okay, Doris, last word.
Yes, I just wanted to note concern that I think we really need to involve persons with vision impairments, persons on this committee, persons from NCCLB and others on a regular basis as you go through this, because I get the idea that there's some experimentation still going on, but I wanted to note that although a lot of lighting improvements have been made and it's brighter in some cases, It is so bright that it's glaring and it washes out contrast in the stations, which is so important and actually was so important to original design. And even in the case, I am so glad you were going to white lights for the platform edge. The platform edge, for anybody's knowledge, is an important issue because it's an ADA equivalent facilitation issue, because the station, well, a lot of stations are not using standard detectable warnings that are yellow on the platform. They're using the red tiles. So the whites were, the white lights were part of the system. However, the original white lights were the warmer yellow color, and the new halogens are this white light. And in rest, they work and do the jobs just so long as their illumination is up at rest, but which the red really didn't do frequently unless they were pretty well up. But like this room, okay, the addition of these lights together with everything being painted white and cables being painted white, all of that, is a really, really bad situation for people with light-sensitive vision impairments like glaucoma, cataracts, and lack of an iris, and other vision impairments that are common that provides. So what I'm wondering is why you made the choice towards the white light color versus something like the warmer, not yellow amber, but the warmer, sort of simulating the incandescence.
Mr. Johnson, Scale, I have a 20 month data.
And I just want to clarify, you're referring to the edge lights.
I'm referring to the edge lights now, although I'm also referring to the station environment as well, where some of the really, really bright white lights are kind of like washing out contrast, and that's just not at the platform, because that's the backlights on the platform aren't being dealt with. But the thing that happens, particularly with white lights on the edge, is when they start to, especially when they start to flash, and you're getting off the train, they flash right up in your face, and they are so uncomfortable. They blind you when you're looking for that edge.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead and respond.
We'll take a closer look at what Kelvin temperature lamp we're using, because that's what you're really, I think you're shooting for here, is making sure that we have some consistent temperature, color temperature. So we'll have a look at that. Thank you for letting us know.
Thank you both for being here tonight, and we went a little bit longer with the segment, but that's okay. We're also running a little bit ahead of time, so it sounds like there's a couple of things to follow up on, and we appreciate that, whether you're able to come do it to us directly or follow up through information to a lot of staff that come to us. We really appreciate that.
Mr. Chair? There was a statement
that's
that
right. Yes,
before you went on. The gentleman is actually here. He just arrived, but he preferred that I read a statement.
That's just fine.
It is from Mr. Paul Kelly, and this is about lighting. He says, while mezzanine and escalator lighting has improved, stairs remain one of the most dangerous places inside the Metro Rail station or system. Stairs can be a barrier for low vision and for older Americans having difficulty with depth perception and balance. The problems with poor lighting can vary by station, but simple solutions can satisfy the needs of most people. For purposes of illustration, I'll describe two situations that I regularly encounter. At Metro Center, passengers pass stairs connecting the upper and lower level platforms as soon as they enter F or H Street. The stairs with one landing has no direct source of lighting, but instead depend on the surrounding indirect lighting to allow for safe use. But station lighting has deteriorated since the 1970s as preventive maintenance has become more infrequent. The result is that the stairs are dirty and it is difficult for many people to distinguish each step. A solution would be to extend the newly installed mezzanine lighting to cover the stairways from above. Reflective materials or paint can help distinguish the borders of landings and individual steps. Capitol South presents a different challenge. The stairs from the street level, which must be used when the escalators are out of service, can be nearly pitch black at night because so many lights are not functioning. This can be dangerous for everyone, not just those who can't see well. The station manager should consistently check and report outages. The stairways from the mezzanine to the platform that is located just inside the fare gates is always shrouded in shadows. Improving the lighting on the bottom of the handrails and bottom of the handrails on both sides would correct some of the problems. Reflective paint and/or strips from the stairs themselves would make the situation even better. The recent painting of part of Union Station walls undoubtedly makes the platform brighter and cleaner, but small changes such as those suggested above can have a wider beneficial impact for less cost.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. B. Would it be possible to give that statement or share that statement? Because there's so much there, and so much that's particular that I think could be helpful to whoever is more appropriate to work with those issues, Mr. Johnson or Ms. Real.
Absolutely.
Make sure they have that.
Sure, we can share that with them. Absolutely.
Yeah. Just
Mr. Chair, can I say something? That has to do with an ADA requirement for the stairs.
Share it very quickly.
Yes, okay. The thing is, I zero what was said, and it's not just in the stations that he's named, it's all over my retirement and one. But I wanted to say that there is an ADA requirement that stairs have edge markings. And I have noticed that, to my knowledge, none of the stairs in the system, for example, the redone stairs and lighting at Vienna, have no edge markings so that the light and the white stairs make it impossible to see the edge of the stairs. Yeah. So that has to be addressed because it's an ADA issue.
Was Chris, were you going to say something? Someone? Okay. No, thank you, Doris. I think that's a very good point. We've had several people, including Barbara and yourself and Mr. Kelly, mention the importance of stairs. And I think that it would be a tremendous use to get to hear back from a lot of staff about what is the current practice for ensuring the stairs are appropriately highlighted. And what we can do about that to make sure that they are. And again, if we're talking about paint or light, maybe multiple, Doris, you're describing something that's a kind of right, exactly. It's more than just lights. So it's part of a larger equation of ensuring that those are properly delineated. So I don't know if Mr. Blake or Dr. B, if y'all want to maybe take that information and work it with our lighting folks that are here to make sure that we get that information to the right people and get feedback.
Yes, Mr. Chair. We'll just, Barbara has one last comment she hopes that she can make.
All right, Barbara, you got 30 seconds.
Thank you. I know a lot of these things we're talking about, the lighting, the painting, and the signage, it's all kind of wrapping around together where one impacts the other. And could you guys please tell me, maybe I missed it, I thought this part was supposed to be starting at 4:50, and I'm sorry that I didn't hear it if you already said it, but what is the plan for the paint? Will that continue to other stations?
Mr. Johnson, can you alert?
At this time, I cannot answer that question. I would like to think so. However, I'll just take that information back and try to find someone that can, maybe at the next meeting, give some information and feedback on that issue.
Yeah, because I do agree with Doris in that we do need to have good contrast, and I was trying to imagine what Union Station would look like if it's fully painted that white, and I was kind of not really sure right yet, so we do need to talk about it from a low vision perspective. It may very well be impacting those low vision groups that Doris had mentioned, but We do also know that you guys are really trying hard to help us out, and we do appreciate the paint. Just for right now, NCCLD has to go on the record that we say if you have to do one thing, it would be illuminate the station, so working on the bulbs first. But I know Chris Blake and I were talking at the last meeting, and it may come from a different bucket, and so we're happy to have more stuff coming out of the bucket to help the low-vision community. Again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Barbara, and I'm really glad you were able to make it when you get a little bit ahead of our schedule, but so I apologize for that, but I'm glad you made it.
Mr.
And
Chair?
I'm able to have some comments. Dr. B?
Yes, I just want members to know that we have scheduled next month, or we're in the process of scheduling next month, for a speaker about the painting issue. We did hear the committee loud and clear at the AAC meeting and here now, so we are working to get that done.
Oh, that's terrific. Will be very welcomed. And again, I would encourage the NCCLB to continue to feed information to us, committee members, either written, oral, whatever works for you guys, and we can make sure that those details that you all bring to us are heard by the WAF staff. So I thank you so much for your continued effort to keep us informed. Alrighty, Ms. Rio, Mr. Johnson, thank you both very much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
That was a long session. I did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you to the committee members for asking questions. We haven't really gotten into lighting in a little while, so I think that was a good topic to cover. I think, Patrick, you're here. Welcome.
Thanks, sir.
You're welcome. Alright, Mr. Blake, good afternoon. Are we ready for our lightning folks?
That would be the unbuttoned. I thought you were going to give it earlier, but we can do it.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. It's a separate item on the agenda, though.
Yes, sir. You're right.
Thanks again, John. I'm going to get some really other crap now. Thanks for the policy notes.
All right.
So, a few weeks ago, we conducted a test, a demonstration of the beacons in Gallery Place. We've got some of them installed, basically a trip from the Atman 7th Street entrance and the bus stop near there, and that elevator entrance to the Glenmont Red Light platform. And about 20-30 beacons are along that route. And they're still in there now. So we did a demo for the AAC and some members of the NFB and the public, and got some good feedback on the beacons. And then the next Monday we had the access board over, and they tested them, and they were very happy about it. Joe Chaffee, the CEO of Winco, had given a presentation to the access board at their headquarters before we brought them all over here and let them go through the system with them. And I've been through the beacons myself a few times and tested them all with Joe before we did the demo. And some of the things we noted were that, first of all, depending upon the generation of your iPhone, Apple has some inconsistencies in the performance of its Bluetooth. Particularly people that still got the 5S are going to have some Bluetooth problems because that version of the phone is known to have Bluetooth issues. My iPhone 7 Plus seemed to work pretty well. Some other people had sevens and sixes, which also worked pretty well. And we're hoping to have the, Joe says he'll have the Android version of this out summer, and I suspect the different Android brands out there will see some variation too. And all of that caused questions and concern about how we're going to adjust the range of beacons for these different responses from the devices that are using them. And also some have some issues about how the beacon transmits and is blocked or not blocked by certain architectural features of the station. So we're experimenting with ones that are next to concrete, ones that are next to metal, ones that are not next to anything, and trying to get a better idea of how the signal transmits in those environments. So we're bringing in one of the programmers next week to tighten up the range of the beacons a bit. Everybody's feedback seemed to be that they hit the message from the beacon a little too soon, and then it was more ambiguous as to exactly where you are. We're trying to get it down to like a 10 to 25 foot range for current purposes, and that seemed to be the most consistent feedback. But what we really need is for more people to get out there and try it out and give us feedback, because we discovered also that people with different levels of vision loss, different people with different levels of ON capability were responding differently to them, and that we sometimes needed more detail in our description, sometimes needed less. So it's a bit of a work in progress, but what I can say is that almost everybody who used it and used the beacons in combination with the maps in the app was able to give independently from any of the three places, either the elevator, the bus stop, or the street entrance, to Glenmont platform by themselves, sometimes with a bit of difficulty, but everybody managed it sooner or later. So that was a limited success. So they're still out there, we're working on them, but if you have some time free and want to play with it on your own, please go out there and test them out. You don't have to be really prepared to test them out, because I appreciate feedback from anybody, any ideas. And then give some feedback to B if you notice a particular beacon that is way off or not, then let us know about that. Already we managed to have one stolen the day after it's put in, because we've now learned that we can't place it anywhere near anybody who's even 6'5 or above to reach them, because of this disappearing in a flash. Fix that problem. So that's basically where we are with it now. We're proceeding to get them. We're going to try to finish Gallery Place soon. We've got maps in development for the other six stations in the pilot, and we're still heading for January of next year to complete the whole thing. Any questions?
Yeah, this is Brian. Just before we go to questions, could you remind people, please, how they can test it up to download an app?
They
need to do, what do they need to do to be able to
play
beacons?
They need to download the Click and Go app, which is at clickandgomaps.com. I think Bea has sent out, I believe, the link several times, haven't you, Bea?
I have, and I will send it out again for members first thing, so that those that want to test it or share with other people the information to test it, you'll have it readily. So I'll do that this week, and I'll also do it again next week, you know, and maybe the week after, just to give everyone, you know, a reminder to please go out and test it.
Yeah, not just yourself, but share it with anybody you know who might be interested in having given us feedback. It's really open to the community to test it out and experiment.
And you said, David, that you're getting ready to go to Gallery Place in the fall, that's up there. Where you are in the process of doing that, and so what's the timeline for that?
the moment I see in the next few months, it's about as specific as I can be. We're just got to figure out what challenges we're going to face with fine-tuning what we put in now, because this really is the first installation in this country of any magnitude, nobody has tried anything like of this size before. I mean, the only ones I know of existence are in London. They've only done one very small station that's not even publicly available. And Boston has these NFC cones, which are quite a different concept. So we're really on the vanguard of this and doing our way carefully because we want to do it right for the first time.
Thank you. I can't imagine why anybody would steal one of the beacons that just
apparently worth $25. I mean, it's not like you can resell them. There's not much of a black market for beacons.
Committee, any questions for Dave Schaefer?
Yes.
Charlie, please.
I guess my question has to do with, and forgive my lack of knowledge about this, I have read stuff on it, but I'm still not clear on the exact function that a beacon does. Now, if I already had something like talking signs analogy, and
right.
So if I were walking in the subway looking for, a palm tree, and probably wouldn't find one. But anyway, say a beacon said palm tree, and I assume that it's directional, so if I go in the direction where it says palm tree, that palm tree. What if the palm trees across railroad tracks? So how do you ensure that the beacons don't put a person in a position where they might be in a situation of danger?
Be in a situation of what?
Danger.
Okay. Well, they're supposed to be there to help prevent that, but basically what they're doing is telling you where you're near. They're not drawing you towards something, they're telling you when you get near something. So it's not like, please come here and follow the platform. It's you're pretty near the escalator because it's meant to be used in conjunction with the written audio maps. And the two are there. So the map is telling you to walk forward 20 feet to the escalator. And then when you get within 10 feet, you will hear you are near the escalator to make sure you know you've gotten in the right direction.
Thank you, Charlie. Excuse me. Other questions?
Doors.
Oh, I'm sorry, Doris.
Yes. I was just wondering, you had mentioned in the AAC meeting, or where it was last time, that you would be, you could also use this with a regular cell phone at some point. So I'm wondering if you're testing that now or whether you're only testing folks with the iPhone. And then the second part is if there are issues with Bluetooth, that would concern me as a deafblind person. Because I could utilize my hearing aids and get the messages directly in my hearing aids if the Bluetooth is working right and given that I have Bluetooth technology in my hearing aids.
Right.
If I do.
In fact, I've done that. I have the same kind of you do a Bluetooth hearing aid connected to my iPhone. So I was hearing it in my hearing aids, either beacons in my hearing aids as I was hearing Siri reading the voice map to me on the phone. And that worked well in conjunction with each other. As to regular cell phones, the beacons themselves only will work if you have Bluetooth. However, the maps are available for use with a regular cell phone. Because we have cell coverage. We now, theoretically, have cell coverage in all the stations. I know it's spotty in places like bottom level Gallery Place, but the Wi-Fi is supposed to be cured now. But guess if you've got a regular cell phone, you don't have Wi-Fi either. But I don't know what Wi-Fi calling is available on a regular cell phone or not.
But if I'm navigating a station,
right
now, I would be able to use it with a cell phone.
Well, what you do is you call the 800 number into Click and Go, select that map from their menu, and start working it through their 800 number.
But I won't get the message from the...
You won't get the beacon. But I can assure you, and I tested this when we first put in the maps by themselves in the gallery place, they will get you from one place to another. The beacons are a supplement and to enhance this and make it easier for everybody and work better. But the maps by themselves are designed to get you there. And they can do it. It's just a little more difficult.
Okay, the last thing is, if I have, and I actually don't right now because I bought my hearing aids within a couple of months of Bluetooth coming on, and I didn't have it replaced yet, but would I be able to hear the beacon if I have Bluetooth in my hearing aids? In other words, would I hear the beacon, maybe not utilizing the maps?
No, not right now. Okay. What we hope to have in the future is with the new technology coming in from France is audio beacons, where you can, the idea would be then, if you're using an app like this, instead of hearing passively hearing the beacon, you can ask the beacon to speak to you. And not only speak to you through your Bluetooth, but speak to you out loud so that you would hear it and be able to aid the hearing in your direction, orient you in the direction of it, in addition to the second generation beacon. That's really third generation. Let me start back off. Current generation is a beacon that transmits in all directions, which says basically you are near here. Next generation, which Click and Go has the patent for already, is that the beacon will be directional. That is, it will differ depending on whether you're coming at it from the north or south.
So it localizes here.
Yes. Third generation is, not only does it do that, but it sounds out loud if you want it to. You can make it speak.
Cool.
So that's just come to fruition.
We'll be in French
up here right now.
We'll be in French, David.
We are.
Sorry. Okay, I'll change. Yeah, Barbara, you got a question. Thank you, Doris.
Actually, Brian, it's a request, if I may. David is doing a great job with all these beacons and stuff, and after the AAC meeting, he and I had a conversation about the website. I don't think any of the blind or vision impaired people in the room here have a chance to check out the new website yet. It looks really, really good, but I personally found some issues with it, and I encourage all you folks to look at it and let David or B, however the chain goes, let them know what you think. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbie. Do you have a general model mindset?
Yes.
Okay.
National's website.
Okay. Yes. National's website. Yes. Thank you, and thank you, Barbara. Other questions for Mr. Schaefer about the IPT system?
Nope.
Okay. These are, I think they have them in SFO too, don't they, David? Isn't that is it the same technology that they have in SFO in San Francisco?
We're looking at that same thing. Yeah, they're looking at IPT.
I have one more question.
All right, Doris, go ahead.
Future, I suppose, future functionality. Will people be able to use this to read bus schedules? Well, bus bay signs for routes, particularly at terminus stations like Vienna or other terminus stations, even though more in places like that. But to read signs for
to find out which bus bay they have to go to. And then secondly, and even just as importantly, the schedule that's up, because, you know, next bus is next bus, but it's not the schedule.
That's a good question, Doris. And the answer is yes. And there is another technology that puts the two together that I'm working on right now, and it's called speech codes, which is a technology that is a code that's similar to a QR code that contains up to 40 minutes of speech. I'm working with a company in Austria that's developing these. You would scan that with your phone. It reads to you the bus route, the bus schedule, and could link to the GPS and the bus. That you would propose putting a beacon with it so that you can not only locate the bus shelter or the bus stop, but it would be like an APS, an audible gesture signal, to help you find that stop. So the beacon itself can only get you within about 10 to 20 feet. The beep then can get you the rest. Once you get to it, find the initial sign, you feel the square, the 2x2 square of the code, you scan the code, and it reads you the information.
But would it help me get to
that's the next technology.
You know, if I were dependent on one, it can help me get to bus bay U5.
Right.
It will.
Okay. Yeah.
That'd be using a QR scan where you kind of hold your phone up and scans the end code. Yeah, those are nuts. That'd be really brilliant. You have to get a smartphone, Doris. Well, we have another ring of fortune here.
Right in my Bluetooth and my hand, my $6,400 variant.
What do you mean? Mine's only 5,000.
Well, you guys need to confer about where you're shopping. Maybe Doris has that Sparkle song or something.
You're expert for that.
Well, thank you so much, David. It was a pleasure hearing from you and thinking about this topic. And again, thank you so much. Thank you to the committee for your questions. I'm excited about some of these technologies. And I can't wait for second and third generation to come along. And I definitely encourage you to pursue that QR technology for bus stop information. That would be an immense step forward.
So, I am. Christopher, yeah. I'm giving the money for it. So
awesome.
I'll give him credit for that.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Dr. B, do we have any new business?
Yes, sir. I just want to remind members about the AAC recruitment. We're in the recruitment period. So we're asking, we have a stand out here with applications. Of course, the information is also online on the AAC's main webpage. We're asking members to please take one or forward it to someone that you know and tell them about the AAC's recruitment. We've already had some members to contact us about possibilities of candidates, and so we're pursuing those options. With those individuals, but if you know any other individuals that would be good for this group and work on issues, you know, strongly and advocate hard for improving public transportation and access, we're asking that you share the information. Brianne?
I have a question. Could you send me an outline? I know my outline is a
contact, but
if you send it to me, so
I can send it to you. Sure. I'm happy to do so.
Yeah, I think Mr. Blake sent out his last, most fabulous Ride of the Nation flyer.
Yes.
So, one of the speakers. I got all the information too. I've been forwarding that. That would be very helpful. I've been sharing that around to a lot of folks to share so they can.
When does the recruitment end?
April 30th.
April 30th. So soon. Okay.
Yeah.
April 30th.
Wow. Well, to get the application.
I have a question about
Charlie.
Is there any particular thing that would disqualify a person from applying?
Working for Metro?
Working
for Metro could disqualify you from not being a person, not being a senior, or a person with a disability could also disqualify you.
Right. But is there anything that in the realm of conflicts of interest that would be, is that just a joke?
Like I said, working for Metro, serving on the Riders Advisory Council, and serving on us as well.
So you can only serve on one. But if you, we've had someone from the Writers of Advisory Council previously contact us who they're no longer there and they expressed an interest. So we sent them an application, so we'll see what happens.
Appreciate it.
Doris, you had a comment?
Well, it's not about that, so it's about a different topic for new business.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. So that's, okay, Patrick has a comment before you speak.
I have a question. Yeah. If you work for DOT or FTA, that would disqualify you, right?
From I don't think so. We have quite a few people, and presently a person on our AAC office that works for FTA.
DOT.
So it doesn't disqualify you, but I will say that was Mary Kay McMahon who works for DOT. I will say there are some members that we have had on most recently and in the past who have got appointed to certain positions, and it's not Metro's policy, but it is the policy to where they are now employed that they can't serve on the committee. As an example, Will Schell was a new member to our committee this year and got a job with DOJ, and in his position at DOJ, he cannot serve on this committee.
So
Charlie,
that was DOJ's rule. Yes, that was DOJ's rule. That's not ours. He was appointed.
Working for Metro or one of the Metro Access contractors.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. B and thank you, Patrick. So, any other questions about the recruitment? Then I'll go to Doris. Oh, good. Okay. Doris, go ahead. What's your new business?
The new business is actually something that came up, I believe, at AAC for me. And the word might have been here. But I'm wondering if we can get a report back about the possibility of having the telephone function for trip planning, schedule arrival time for bus and rail, particularly bus, to have an option once they give you the arrival of the next bus, for example, to let you say next bus, you know, or the bus after that, you know, to get basically some access to schedules so that if you want to know when you're traveling what the next bus is, but you're afraid that you might miss it, that you are able to get a little bit further into the schedule to make a plan.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, Doris. In fact, I was going to mention that earlier during our ombudsman session, because it strikes me that system hasn't been updated in about 100 years. Sorry guys, but it's been a while, and it could need some specification. And I think that'll be, because I do use the right, this is the right guy. You call 202-637-7000, and you say right guy, and you want some schedule information.
Calendar trip plan, I know.
Yeah, exactly. You can't say next trip, it doesn't recognize, there's a whole range of commands it does not recognize. To give an example of a system that does, you can call Amtrak, talk to Julie, and you can ask Julie for the next train, the previous train, or you know, there's a more flexible,
exactly.
And it's just a more nimble and useful system. And so a lot of times you don't want just one discrete train schedule bit of information you want, or bus, you want multiple. You know, at least to know what your options are. It's more syndication.
Or you can get it, but you have to say,
start
over again and put the whole thing in. And the other thing that I will note to the chair, I kind of wasn't able to be here yesterday, obviously the report is that that recently I have noticed that there are problems accessing both the live customer information on weekends especially, and at times also getting trip planning and schedule arrival time The computer is messing up, so they really need to check that.
Thank you, Doris. Could be Dr. B or Chris or somebody, could we get a...
We will definitely follow up on that and bring in the right person up. We can get the direct answer.
Right, right.
And we, this ride guide piece is new to me, it's surprising in terms of, because I know on the trip planner,
yes,
you can see multiple options, and why the phone complement wouldn't mimic that is a problem.
It's pretty limited, actually. Yes. And I think we could use some stitching on that. I think that would be great.
Yes.
Great. Thank you, Doris. I'm glad you brought that up. All right. Any other new business? Or are we good? Everybody feel good?
I had an announcement.
Oh, sure.
2 days ago, this is true, in 1930, a Twinkie was invented.
Well, that would be brought on a share. Commemorate the moment. It's got to be, I don't know. So bring that up, and I'm not happy. It's kind of, I don't know. Yeah, someone on this way, Elmer, what got awful things we have come up with in this country sometimes. And share with the whole world. Alrighty. Well, thanks everybody. So, with that, can I get any motions for adjournment?
I will adjourn.
Charlie has moved. Yeah, second. Any discussion? Alright, all those in favor of adjournment, just give up and say hi.
Hi.